Call the other, call the order of the House Judiciary Committee meeting at 1:01 on Friday. Would the clerk please read the roll?
Vice Chairman Bundy?
Here.
Representative Porter?
Here.
Representative Roper? Representative James? Representative Cross?
Here.
Representative Berkowitz?
Here.
Chairman Green?
Here. We do have a quorum. And before us today, we have just one bill, a light calendar. We not only have the bill, but we have the bill's sponsor sitting next to me, Representative Porter, and we will be hearing sponsor substitute for House Bill Number 7, probably better known as the Resolution Disputes Bill. Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. If I may stay here just for a brief introduction of the bill, there are four or five people to testify that I think will be able to fill in all the gaps of what I'm going to tell you very briefly, that this bill basically represents the formalization, if you will, of a program that has been started and is up and running, albeit in its beginning stages in Anchorage and soon to be in other areas of the state, victim offender mediation. It is a process whereby appropriate criminal activities of juveniles are disposed of by this process rather than a formal, more formal process. It allows the offender and the victim to get together. It affords the opportunity to the offender, which often doesn't happen, for a real appreciation, if you will, of the ramifications of his or her act, really a recognition of how much damage, physical property damage and emotional damage occurred to the victim because of the acts. It has had really good success in changing the direction of victim offenders or juvenile offenders and giving an appreciation and in many cases restitution that may not have otherwise been obtained to victims. The bill establishes minimum, albeit appropriate, standards for these kinds of resolution centers and provides immunity, limited immunity to the boards and personnel of these kinds of centers. And the sponsor substitute was done so as to add to those kinds of limited immunity the boards and personnel of the youth court programs that are beginning to serve an additional function and benefit in this area so that those protections can be afforded to those folks also. I'll then, with that, sit down and let the witness list proceed.
Thank you, Representative Porter. Would the record reflect that Representative James has joined us? And are there any questions of the sponsor before we go to some of the testimony? Seeing none, do you have an order by which you want to have the people discuss? We have five people on teleconference. Are there any people in the audience who wish to testify or just be available for questions?
Bob and Margot.
You would like to testify? Margot, would you please come forward and identify yourself? You know the drill.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my name's Margot Knute. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And this session, I'm representing the Governor's Children's Cabinet on bills related to youth and justice. And it's a pleasure to appear before this committee. I think House Hess is a very close second, but this is my favorite committee in the legislature, and it's just a pleasure to be here again.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's by way of announcing she's running for some
time. Oh, she's smarter than me.
Yeah.
The Governor's Conference on Youth and Justice was a year-long process that is trying to help the state in finding solutions, long-term, short-term, middle-term, to the problem of youth crime. And one of the principal solutions offered is that we find alternatives to the state's health and social services delinquency proceedings for minor juvenile offenses. And one of the most successful alternatives that we recommend is the use of mediation in appropriate cases. Not all cases are appropriate for mediation, especially domestic violence cases have proven not to be good candidates because there's unequal power in the relationship. But for many cases, it's good for the offender, and it's also a benefit to the victim because it gives the victim a better understanding of what the incident was about, why they were victimized, and it has significantly reduced the fear of re-victimization by the victim. And that's a real benefit when we all need to get over incidents like that and move forward in a positive way. So there's some real good feedback out there on programs like this. There is one matter that the Children's Cabinet would like to address in the bill, and that is mediation should be available for both health and social services to use as a tool in informal adjudication of cases, and it should also be available to the court system to ask that somebody try to use mediation for especially determining amount of restitution. So the bill allows both of those, but what the bill also does is it allows both the court system and the department to recognize these mediation centers. And our recommendation is that the bill be amended so that only Health and Social Services is in the business of recognizing the mediation centers. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Predominant reason is that Health and Social Services is used to doing a function like that. It's within the ambit of what they're doing already, whereas the court system is not and does not particularly wish to get in the business of it. And it would also, by only having one place that's recognizing them, it would prevent a mediation center from going to one, not getting recognition, going to the other, and creating some problems along those lines. So we think that both the court system and HESS ought to be able to recommend or direct an attempt at mediation, but that only HESS should be the one to recognize them. And that would involve deleting Section 1 and making a couple of minor changes in a couple other places. And I have written it out as an amendment if it would be helpful to the committee.
It would be if you could maybe get, you have copies?
Yes, I do.
Excellent.
Michelle, for the information, the committee have already discussed this with Margo, and Chris is here for any other explanation if you'd like. I have absolutely no opposition to this amendment, just so that the court system has the authority to utilize and refer to these kinds of programs, which still remains. And I think it would be much cleaner if DFYS was the one that, in effect, check the credentials of the program, and the court system would defer to that establishment.
That certainly seems to make sense. Yes, Representative Bundy?
Hearing that, if the chair is ready for a motion.
Let's call this Amendment 1. There may be other amendments, so we're talking about the... It's not numbered, but it's a six-line amendment that was just passed out. Will be called Number 1.
And I would move Amendment Number 1.
Amendment Number 1 has been moved. Is there objection? Seeing none, we have adopted Amendment Number 1. Click.
Thank you. This
For those of you on the teleconference, I hope you heard Ms. Knuth's discussion of what Amendment Number 1 was. Please continue.
I was just going to comment, Mr. Chairman, that this may be the first, last, and only time that the executive branch is offering to let the judiciary off the hook on doing something, and we would like a credit, a chit, if you will, for future offset there.
That's only proper.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Unless there are any questions.
Is there a rebuttal or a question to the...
Yes, I defer to Representative Croft.
Representative Croft.
Thank you. I understand that you've had a little conversation with my staff, and they identified what they and I consider to be a possible disagreement within it. And it may not be real. I wanted to get your comments on it.
Representative Croft. to this amendment?
No.
No.
Another section of the bill.
And possibly for another amendment, but on the bill itself.
Oh, all right. So there's nothing, there's no problem, though, with this amendment.
No objection to that amendment.
Okay, all right.
On page 4 of the bill, the bolded text, giving the authority to require the minor to refer to these, to be referred to these, to resolve any disputes, that establishes the court's power. And then on page 8, between lines 7 and 12, section F, establishing the authority of a minor to withdraw. It appeared to me, I guess still does as I read it, that this is that section F on page 8 establishes the authority only for a minor who voluntarily enters the program.
To withdraw.
To withdraw. And my worry was that if the court ordered it, there wasn't the authority to withdraw as well. And the sponsor statement, I think, rightly said that these are more, these programs work better when it's voluntary throughout. I don't know whether it's a problem. It appeared to me to be, and that's why I put what we could, for discussion purposes, Mr. Chairman, make amendment number 2.
You're offering amendment number 2 for discussion?
For discussion and comment by the witness.
I will object for discussion purposes.
Okay.
And everyone have a copy of amendment number 2. This also is yes, Representative.
Well, yes, I do have comment on that. Is that what I can talk about?
Yes, I just want to make sure everybody had this.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Okay. And my comment is, and I agree with Representative Croft, that it works better when it is voluntary. And I'd like to have someone else tell me exactly how this works, because it seems to me like the way this works is that the option for a voluntary compromise here is something that is given before they are given a sentence of some sort. And it would seem to me like that this amendment allows them to withdraw without any penalty after they've had a sentence. So it looks to me like they've already gone over this opportunity to make a voluntary thing. Then they've been sentenced for something, and I think it's too late then to be voluntary. I think voluntary has already gone by. So that's my comment, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong.
Representative Porter.
There's probably oversimplifying, there's perhaps two main stages that a referral might be made. It might be made by DFYS when they're adjusting the charge, if you will, or the allegation, and the juvenile recognizes participation and is advised about this program and says that sounds good, and the victim consents, and they can make that referral. In, I think, from the past committee, we learned 5% of those cases that come through DFYS end up in actually a petition being filed, and they're going to court because there isn't resolution of guilt or innocence or participation or whatever. The petition hearing would establish the guilt or innocence, if you will. There's still, in many cases, the sanctions and or restitution issue. At that point, they can have the option if both people, and it's my understanding that the court would not institute that if recognizing that it's a voluntary program, unless he or she had the consent of both parties. But assuming that that is the case, or that we need to put language in to make sure that they recognize that's the case, then there still would be the option of this mediation service for the restitution agreement. And it also, we're just doing so much for the court today, it also lets the court off the hook in terms of having to monitor that. The program monitors that restitution fulfillment and then reports back to the court on one, either that the process broke down and they should come back and look at sanctions, or that it was successful and then the court can close their docket also. But that's how that would work.
Representative James?
To ask a question on that. So you've explained it to me to that point. And so then if they have had this voluntary compromise, and then that doesn't work. I understand, and it's, I think that's covered in here pretty much, that they have to, in writing, say that it didn't work, and then they go back to the court. Then the court has the obligation to make whatever sentence it is. And I would assume that that court could make them go back and do some sort of a restitution that this doesn't cover. Is that what you're saying? Is that wouldn't be covered here? I mean, after they've gone through the voluntary first part and that doesn't work, I wouldn't want them to get a second option to object to the...
I think the way that, if I may...
Yes, please, Representative Porter.
It would be really unusual for me to see a court give somebody a second chance at that apple. If there was agreement, as I say, after the determination of guilt, that both parties wanted to participate in the process, the court would recognize that they are going to try. By the crafting of the statute, it recognizes that either party can walk away in the middle of that process if it is that they just can't make it work. There isn't a sanction by the court for the fact that they walked away, but the juvenile must recognize that he then returns to court and is faced with the decision of the court on what his sanctions and or restitution process is going to be. And I don't think there'll be a lot of debate about that. It'll just be instituted, ordered, and that's it. I think it's a pretty good motivation to participate in the program, quite frankly. But I wouldn't see the court giving them another chance.
Just if I could just follow up on that. So this language, which is intended to, thank you, Mr. Chairman, is intended to be added to the underlined changes on page 4, basically then to me says the same thing that it says on 8. So explain to me the legal reason why we need to put it in there.
Well, I think the offer of the amendment would probably be the best of that. Representative Croft?
Right. It seemed to me, and we started this process out with me asking whether it was, in fact, needed. It still appears to me to be needed, but I could be wrong, that Section F on page 8 covers when a minor or a victim voluntarily enters a dispute resolution process, and that if they did not enter it, if it was ordered in some respect, they would still have the option to get out. Now, it might be as simple as removing voluntarily. Anyone who enters a dispute resolution process can withdraw by that process. But it, at least facially, it seemed that there was a possible conflict between where you're ordered and where you enter it of your own.
Do you see if there's validity to having the court order the minor into the resolution process that he could say, no court, I don't want to go? Is that in the best interest? Either there should be some teeth in the court's order, or that we shouldn't have that as an ability for the court to order it.
Representative Porter's a better expert on this, but it would seem to me that it would be a greatly decreased utility in forcing them through a process when one or the other of them is not participating. So it makes some sense to order that it be started, but not much sense to order that it be continued once it becomes clear that one party or the other doesn't want to go ahead. Forcing you to start is one thing. Forcing you to continue through after the victim in particular or the perpetrator, either one, says this is not the process I want to...
I'd
be interested in Margo's response.
Mr. Chairman, I think there is a benefit in ordering the parties to try the mediation, but not penalizing them if it doesn't work. And with that, I would leave page 4 alone, and I would just strike the word voluntarily later on then in section F, because I believe that F would then cover both situations. I don't think that it's necessary to add the proposed amendment language on page 4. And in fact, I would be a little concerned when it says, may at any time withdraw from the services of the center with no penalty for violating the court order, because that wouldn't really be a violation of the court's order. Court order is start, see if you can, and come back, and I'll tell you what your restitution order is if you don't work it out.
Representative Croft, is that satisfactory to you that we would withdraw the amendment if we were to strike, or maybe change your whole concept, to strike voluntarily on line 7 and then withdraw your amendment?
Yes, that would be fine. And if Representative Porter has no...
Does everybody understand what we're...
I agree. I mean, that makes me more comfortable.
We'll actually offer that as amendment number 2, then, to strike voluntarily from the middle of line 7, page 8. Is there objection to that amendment? Seeing none, passed. Are there any other comments from anyone here before we go to teleconference? I wonder if, let's go to teleconference and then come back. I'm sorry, I met the people that were in the immediate discussion. That's all right with you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record and clarify my understanding, and I think Representative Porter did this, that someone who removes themselves from mediation is not removing themselves from the purview of the court, and they are...
No.
They've gone from the same man to the, to the fire.
Right. They say on the street their stuff is weak.
Anchorage, are you on teleconference?
Participation is broken.
Anchorage, can you hear us?
Yes.
Is Angela Salerno there, please?
Thank you, Chairman Green, members of the committee. My name is Angela Salerno. I'm Executive Director of the National Association of Social Workers. I believe that you have my testimony in your packet, so for time's sake, I will just sort of hit the highlights of what I've written. There are many witnesses here who can also speak to community dispute resolution centers. The service provided there, victim offender mediation, is one that we highly support. It provides both intervention and treatment to the juvenile, and also demands that the juvenile is held accountable for his or her behavior. We support this because it's a balanced approach to juvenile justice. A balanced approach gives equal weight to ensuring community safety, to holding offenders accountable to their victims, and it also provides competency development for the offenders, skill building and socialization so that the offender can pursue legitimate endeavors after their release. The United States Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention has supported development and improvement of juvenile justice restitution, victim offender mediation, other restorative justice programs since 1977. Based on research showing that properly structured programs can reduce recidivism. In addition, by the end of 1995, at least 24 states had adopted or were examining juvenile codes or administrative procedures that include a balanced approach to juvenile justice. Community dispute resolution centers offer a very low-cost, community-based, an effective alternative to costly incarceration of juvenile. NAA study supports the state's recognition of these services as a truly viable response to juvenile crime and a tool in ongoing prevention efforts. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Angela. Are there any questions of the committee for Ms. Salerno? Next, we have Kathleen Anderson.
This is Kathleen. I just want to appear today on behalf of two organizations. First, the Alaska Dispute Settlement Association, in which I was recently elected president, and secondly, my own business, the Arbitration Mediation Group, based in Anchorage. The board of directors of the Alaska Dispute Settlement Association directed that I submit written testimony, and you should have that before you. They unanimously support the creation of dispute resolution, community dispute resolution centers under Bill 7, and did not get into a long debate about the general purposes, but are in philosophy in support of the underlying purposes as well. They commend the sponsor of the bill for coming forward and those who worked very hard to further this effort. And now moving on to my own personal comments, I have in the last 2 years, I had the luxury, if you will, of being able to observe the impact of these centers on a national level through participation in a number of efforts in the Society of Professionals in Dispute Resolution, which is the largest and oldest national organization of mediators, arbitrators, hearing officers, and others involved in alternative dispute resolution processes. The use of mediation, particularly in community dispute resolution centers, not only in juvenile matters, but also in nonviolent criminal behaviors on the whole from adults, has become an extremely powerful resource in this country to deter the type of conduct that we have just not been able to completely control and deter through the traditional penal system. And I am just so encouraged to see this happen. It's going to, I think, in many, many ways improve community relations, not only in terms of adults, juveniles, juveniles to juveniles, children in our school systems, but will go to great lengths and strengths to reduce violence as a whole, which, as we all know, is ever increasing and becoming a danger to employees and others who walk the face of this planet. I have one comment with respect to the amendments that I heard before, and while I have not thoroughly looked at every word to ensure that there is some direction given within the bill to address this, I do need to bring it out, and that is some sort of language in the bill that would give a court guidance in its ability to order a juvenile to initiate mediation, still make it very clear that participation is voluntary. If the word voluntary is removed as proposed before, and it does not appear anywhere else within the bill, the sense of its entire language as interpreted by the court will remove the voluntary nature of the process, which is critical to its existence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathleen. Any questions from the committee?
Where would you put it?
We have Patrick Cunningham.
Yes, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity of providing testimony in support of this important legislation. I'm a professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage, chair of the McLaughlin Youth Center Community Advisory Board, and a founding board member of the Community Dispute Resolution Center in Anchorage. I've also worked as a professional in the juvenile justice system for approximately 10 years. The passage of House Bill 7 is vital to our continuing efforts to provide restorative justice to victims of crime. Our center is doing a marvelous service mediating restitution contracts between victims and juvenile offenders, and the center is a contributing member of the Anchorage Make a Difference juvenile anti-crime effort, which is beginning a second year of operation. This legislation is necessary to its continued growth and the development of similar programs throughout the state. These programs are low cost and community-based, drawing heavily from dedicated volunteer citizens who want to be active participants in removing crime from their neighborhoods. Much of the financial support for our Anchorage program has come from the municipality, University of Alaska Anchorage, community businesses, nonprofit organizations, and individual citizens. There are over 200 similar programs in the United States and Canada, and over 100 programs in Europe, demonstrating effectiveness as an alternative response to first and second time offenders. Findings from these programs have demonstrated that when a victim is given an opportunity to meet with the offender, over two-thirds of them wish to participate. The restitution contract is very durable, and many programs have reported over 95% successful completion. Victim appreciation for the justice model is well documented. Offenders are confronted directly with the destructive results of their crime, held accountable, requiring that they take action to make amends to the victims and the community, and closely monitored to assure that restitution is given. Victims are empowered by having the opportunity of directly participating in the justice process rather than the standard criminal justice process, which tends to be an offender-oriented system. This legislation will institutionalize community dispute mediation centers and set forth standards to be followed. Convention's strength is that it represents a partnership between government, business, education, voluntary agencies, local communities, and individual citizens to deal with the violence of crime by emphasizing swift and early intervention, offender accountability, victims' rights, and restorative justice. Right on time. Thank you for listening. Appreciate your efforts towards passing this legislation.
Thank you, Patrick. Representative Bundy?
Yes, Professor Cunningham had mentioned low cost, and it triggered a question that I've had in the back of my mind. We seem this will, I'm not questioning the efficacy of victim offender mediation, but this legislation may indeed promote growth in a business area, and that is mediation offenders, or offender mediation. What does it cost for mediation? Who pays? And if Hess is going to certify these people, what's the cost to have these groups certified?
We'll be able to ask the people from Hess as they come up.
Okay, thank you.
Next, we have Nikishka Stewart.
Yes, good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. My name is Nikishka Stewart, and I am the Executive Director of the Anchorage-based Community Dispute Resolution Center. I am a past president of the Alaska Dispute Settlement Association, and I am currently a board member with the International Victim Offender Mediation Association, which is a collection of community mediation centers and independent victim offender mediation programs in our community base. This legislation will provide an invaluable opportunity to provide a number of community needs, or meet a number of community needs, one primarily being providing a restorative justice process for victims, which places them at the heart of receiving restitution, justice, and closure around a very traumatic event in their lives. Typically, in a traditional justice process, the focus is on the offender, as others have mentioned already, and the victim often complains of feeling victimized a second time by the system because of a lack of information, a lack of feeling that they have a chance to be heard, and receiving a standardized type of reparation which may or may not meet their deeply based emotional needs for resolution. The beauty of the victim offender mediation process is that it is community-based, mobilizing community volunteers who are trained to assist victim and offender with the resolution of their case. It allows for creativity and flexibility that is not permitted in the traditional justice system. The victim may decide that what they really need to repair their damage is for the offender to come over and personally fix the door they kicked in or jimmy the lock on, instead of a court-ordered monetary payment of $500, for instance. The victim may receive closure more thoroughly by having some sweat equity, as I call it, paid back by the offender for the damage done. Offender accountability is also at the heart of this, but it is not an offender abuse program. We are there to support the offender to, in a constructive way, to deal with the choices they made and the behavior they had that ended up damaging the victim. It is not a yelling match where the victim stands there and abuses the offender, but the offender is supported to say, yes, I was there, yes, I did it, and I'm here to make amends. We endured a recent test of our confidential records. It has been the policy of the CDRC since its inception to keep all proceedings inside a mediation session and any contracts achieved as a result of mediation very private. As I'm sure you can well imagine, a victim going through this experience is reliving the crime and sharing a lot of very personal information about what happened and how it affected them. It's critical to the discussion held with the offender, but the process could be severely impacted if that information or any resulting contracts are compelled to be shown in court. Very recently, we were compelled to provide very limited information about the results of a mediation. So I urge you to consider that this legislation is an intensely community-building piece of work and will benefit a wide spectrum of people from our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee for Ms. Stewart? Before we go on with the other people in Anchorage, I think probably we have a bit of house cleaning to do. Representative Bundy?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we ought to adopt the sponsored substitute as amended as our working document so that we have that officially before us.
Is there objection to adopting the amended sponsor substitute as our working document? Hearing none, so done. And we will now go to Suzanne DiPietro.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Suzanne DiPietro, and I am with Patrick Cunningham and one of the founding board members of the CDRC here in Anchorage. I also am the staff attorney for the Alaska Judicial Council, and before the CDRC was formed, Patrick Cunningham and others approached the Judicial Council about helping to set up an evaluation component of the Victim Offender Mediation Program, and so I've been helping with that in my official capacity as staff attorney for the Judicial Council, and then in my own personal capacity I serve on the board, so I kind of have two different roles. I guess I won't take up too much time. I'm available for questions, but I find myself to be in complete agreement with everything Pat and Nikki have just said, and I can't really think of anything further to add. So I'll just leave it at that unless you have any questions.
Thank you, Suzanne. That was very succinct and appreciated. Next, we have Linda Johnson.
Yes, my name is Linda Johnson. I'm the legal advisor at the Anchorage Youth Court, and I understand that you have a January 31st letter from Sharon Leon, our executive director. I'm just in here today to testify on behalf of immunity from suit, and I was under the impression that Anchorage Youth Court would have been included in this particular bill so that, Youth Court in Alaska, not Anchorage Youth Court specifically, but Youth Court in Alaska would be included in this bill as also being immune from suit, identical to the language on page 8, subsection H, in which the Community Dispute Resolution Centers are also immune from suit. For those of you who do not know what Anchorage Youth Court does, Anchorage Youth Court prosecutes juvenile offenders through a trial of their peers. In other words, all members of the court, including the judges, are students. Anchorage Youth Court gets its cases from McLaughlin Youth Center, just as I understand the Community Dispute Resolution Center in Anchorage does. Anchorage Youth Court has been in operation since 1989. However, it did only 25 cases a year until the Making a Difference program came up online. We are a component of the Making a Difference program, and in 1996, we did almost 400 cases. We expect to do 650 or more in 1997. The cases that Anchorage Youth Court adjudicates relieve the Rockland Youth Center of the burden of those cases. We follow through complete sentencing, and when the case is done, then we return it completed to McLaughlin so that McLaughlin does not have to deal with those particular juveniles that are sent to Anchorage Youth Court. There are other youth courts around the state. There is one operating in Mattoon, there's one operating in Kodiak, and I believe there's also one in Juneau. There are also other youth courts which are in the planning stages, both in Kenai and Fairbanks, and we have had frequent requests from the Bush community to set up youth courts out there. Immunity from suit would help Anchorage Youth Court as well as the other youth courts around the state. Anchorage Youth Court believes that since it is providing service to the state, it should be immune from civil suit, just as the Community Dispute Resolution Centers would be immune. We currently do not have that particular immunity, although we do have statutory authority passed by the legislature prior to the Making a Difference program. Our board of directors will not allow us to take certain cases because of the inability to protect ourselves from suit. And it also places our volunteers in a particularly jeopardizing position. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Linda, that was so persuasive that we have taken your comments and already got them included in Section 4 of the sponsor substitute, which I apologize must not be up there in the LIO. But the sponsor substitute that we just addressed on page 5, Section 4, does precisely what you just asked, and it is for the reasons you stated, plus Ralph Samuels bending my arm.
What service?
Do you have a copy in the LIO of the sponsor substitute?
No, they sent it yesterday.
It was sent yesterday. Are you sure it's not there someplace?
Yes, I am sure it is here. Somebody here have it.
We'll ship you one while we're hearing the rest of the comments, and there are some, at least one other testimonial from Juno, Representative Bundy.
Just on the youth court, and to add to my edification, what types of cases were you not taking because of the lack of indemnification?
Certain cases that may have any sort of overtone of gang-related affiliations, anything that was potentially hazardous either to our own members or maybe to anyone in the community. If we were to put a defendant out on community work service, if we thought there was any sort of chance that there might be any sort of violence towards anybody, we would definitely turn that case down. And it doesn't even have to be a big chance. It can just be very slim chance, but because we don't have any immunity, we have to turn those cases down.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would sound like they didn't get to cover many cases then.
Linda, did that conclude your testimony while we're waiting for you to get a copy of the sponsor substitute?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to Barbara Brink.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Barbara Brink. I'm the director of the Alaska Public Defender Agency, and I'm happy to support this bill, which focuses on meaningful community involvement instead of our usual debate of treatment versus punishment models. I think our experience is that justice is best served when victims, offenders, and communities all receive equitable treatment in the justice process. And the system so far has been unable to meet the needs of one client when the needs of the other clients are not addressed. Crime in this state severs bonds between victims, offenders, and families. And although we all recognize that offenders must take full responsibility for their acts, the responsibility of restoring mutual respect and understanding and support among those involved must be shared by us as a community as a whole. I think this is a creative and effective approach that we support, and we hope it spreads statewide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Ms. Brink?
Just, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Barbara, Representative Porter, thank you very much. That isn't the first, won't be the last.
Thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to Sharon Sturgis.
Yes, thank you, Sharon. Okay, I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to testify and testifying in support of House Bill Number 7. My name is Sharon Sturgis. I am the case manager of the Community Dispute Resolution Center here in Anchorage. I am here today wearing another hat as well. I've trained as an attorney. I represented criminal defendants for a number of years on a contractual basis for the Office of Public Advocacy, and also took clients off the street or out of jail, so to speak. So I have some personal observations that I wanted to bring to bear today. But perhaps the main reason I'm here is I'm a real in-the-trenches person that I want to make myself available to answer questions, because we have been operating a victim offender mediation program at both the diversion level, which you have identified in the bill, and at the probation level. So we have maintained and successfully mediated cases at both the informal level and at the probation level. I have enjoyed very, very good working relationships with the intake officers at McLaughlin, probation officers, and the public defender who is dedicated to representing juveniles. And the bottom line about the process, perhaps we can start discussing dollars and number of people served. To get to a question that was asked earlier, I think our budget last year was approximately $55,000 for the year. We do not presently charge for our services. Our services are free, although we are thinking about implementing some kind of a sliding fee scale. that is contemplated in a section of the bill, so we could probably easily do that. We negotiated approximately $11,000 in victim restitution last year, and of that, it was actually $10,090, and of that, $10,640, of that amount, $10,090 was paid. That represents a 95% payment rate. Our office acts as a monitor for the payment. We can accept payments for the victims. We document the payments in their files. I then contact the probation officer or the intake officer and state that payment has been made. I give the intake officer or probation officer monthly referral reports so that they have follow-up information in their files. The probation officers are usually very, very happy to have our agency do the follow-up because they know that they don't have to try to go back into court if restitution isn't paid. Anyway, I'm here mostly to make myself available. I know the process works. It works for both the victims and the offenders. And I'm here to answer questions and particular detailed questions.
Yes, we do have a question. Representative Bundy.
Thank you for addressing the cost question. I guess I would have a semantic problem with free services. Obviously, you are funded from somewhere for the $55,000, and I would encourage you to institute a fee for your service. Most people have a greater appreciation for services if there is some cost, direct cost attached to them. But where do you get your funding for the $55,000?
We are in partnership with Anchorage Youth Court and through the Making a Difference program presently that the municipality of Anchorage has initiated.
And is that state funded or federally funded?
No, that is muni money. That is not state money. That is not federal money. That is muni money. And private, half of that is private donation. Approximately $25,000 of that comes from such private entities as ATU, Cargopstein, IBEW, and other private donors.
Well, my thanks to the private donors that are helping support your program.
So we are providing the state a direct service by taking cases. Representative Berkowitz, we are case level with 83 cases. We're referred, I rejected 6 cases. The bulk of the cases that were rejected, I can say, were based on youth that were in crisis situations, you know, suicide watch or chemical involvement to a degree that I felt that they could not negotiate.
All about Representative Berkowitz.
And did you handle them all, or did other individuals do the casework?
I presently do all the initial case screening and intake. What that means is basically I get preliminary information on a case from an intake officer or a probation officer. Based on the general information, I usually give an indication, sure, that sounds like a good case that we might attempt to mediate. After that point, I usually receive the intake or the probation officer's file, which consists of a police report, charging documents, and any other relevant information. After I receive that file, I assign a case number and work up the file as a CDRC file, and I make initial contact with the offender. I do a pre-mediation interview with the offender to determine whether or not he or she is appropriate for mediation. What does that mean? That means basically are they have they admitted to some degree of involvement in the offense? Are they articulate? And are they not in crisis, basically? And then I do a light interview with the victim to see, number one, if the victim wants to participate, because although it might not be voluntary for the offender, it certainly is voluntary for the victim. So I do a pre-mediation interview with the victim. I also screen that victim to make sure they're not going to be a danger to the youth. I'm not going to put a victim in the room that's going to beat up a kid. And then after that, I assigned the case to a team of specially trained mediators, and they set the date for the mediation and bring the parties together.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have just one question. You mentioned some $55,000 of cost and some $10,000 of restitution. It sounds like, except for a decimal point error, my stock portfolio, you buy high and sell low. There is obviously a lot of other merit to this other than just the exchange of dollars. And I would hope that Robert Butkane can come and enlighten us on some of that. Certainly.
Yeah, I just want to say that we, you know, if you look at the kids when they walk out of these mediations, I've seen some real tough kids that present to me in a pre-mediation interview, and by the end of the mediation, they've cried. They really, if these kids did it, they did it. And I really think that at this point in their lives, this is the time we're going to reach people to break the pattern of criminal activity, and I'd like to think that we are doing really transformative work here, and I really believe we are.
Thank you. Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Robert Butkane. I am a juvenile probation officer with the state of Alaska, and I supervise the Anchorage Juvenile Intake Unit. To follow up on what Sharon was just referring to about kind of what the outcome is of some of these referrals, about 2 years ago, I had a family friend whose son went with another young person into a store through a vent in the roof. Once they got in there, they kind of messed things around some and then took a couple boxes of candy bars and potato chips, and then broke the front door and left the building. So they had done a burglary in the second degree, and they had done a fair amount of mischief damage inside, and then stole, you know, $10-$30 worth of with food items. They were caught. They were brought into the intake unit because of the friendship association that I had with the family. The case was assigned to another intake officer, but I had the distinct advantage of being able to look at that case not only as a systems insider, but also as a family friend. So once the system was done with the work, I could still kind of know what happened with that. This young man, as part of the accountability system that was imposed, was to participate through the mediation program. He did that. The victim sat down. They worked it out. The damage was repaired. Some community work service was completed. Apology letter. I'm not exactly certain of all of the details of what the young man had to do, but that was finished in roughly 4 to 6 months from the date that the offense had occurred. And as the years have gone by, now it's 2-3 years since this incident has happened, when I talk with this young man or his family about what things are like right now, what that young man remembers is not the money that he had to pull out of his college savings account to pay for the door, or not the community work service that he had to do, but what he really remembers was sitting down at that table in a room with the victim, the mediator, and himself, looking eye to eye, soul to soul, to that person whom he victimized through his fun little mischief. And it's that I think he will take with him forever in life. And it's that element that I think really speaks favorably to implementation of mediation programs. It personalizes some of this illegal victimization behavior that our offenders get involved in. Another real strong advantage is it is a place where victims have a genuine audience, a place of equality at the table. They're not just afterthoughts. They're not just side issues of a whole huge process. It's a place where they can come And I guess it's even fair to say that their concerns are paramount in this whole process. That's one of the things that I really enjoy about having a program in Anchorage available to us. We did meet with the mediation program in Anchorage with Division of Family and Youth Services, and we started several months ago to try the experiment of using that service for formal probation cases, those kids that are under formal disposition judgments of the court, and they do work. There are problems, but we're able to negotiate those through and work them out. And the way that the bill has been amended, I think, is suitable and sufficient for the juvenile delinquency system to be able to use mediation programs both for the informal interventions as well as the formal court system or court programs that we have, court orders that we have. The department has submitted a zero fiscal note with this bill. What we have been able to do is to work together with individual communities and entities to form these partnerships to deal with juvenile crime, and that's what took place in Anchorage, where the Municipal Assembly offered the state of Alaska money for intake officers, for youth court, for victim offender mediation, for sentencing coordinators, a whole comprehensive juvenile crime intervention proposal. And I think as we continue into the next century, we will see more and more of these partnerships between local government, state government, private business, citizen groups, nonprofits, and so on, so that what we may have in terms of expenditures of resources may not always be in terms of dollars. It might be commitment to make sure bylaws are done, or it might be a whole number of other tasks that aren't monetary in nature. The Anchorage program does require some level of funding to operate. In its case, the monies are coming from the municipality of Anchorage and private donations. They are looking at, as I understand it, in talking with Nikki not too long ago, they're in the process of obtaining United Way certification so that they may be available for contributions through that venue. The department has made available to communities in the past small seed grants to get programs started, such as youth court, the mediation program, other community diversion programs. I'm not familiar with specific dollar amounts that we have set aside for that, but I do know that that is an option that the department has had available to it to assist local communities in creating these diversion resources. The indemnification issue, I'm glad to see that that is included. I think as we continue to work on these partnerships with local communities, we should keep this phraseology handy because we may want that for other programs like fire safety classes or community work service programs and so on. But I think that is part of what the state can do as its part without expending monies to help localities, municipalities, and organizations towards our single objective, trying to reduce the incidence of juvenile crime. I wholeheartedly, on behalf of the department, support this bill, and I do hope that it succeeds through the session.
Mr. Robert and Margaret had to leave, and certainly all of you people on teleconference, I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I think what this bill does is move a large step forward in what I think personally is one of the major problems we have is lack of sense of responsibility and lack of authority. And I think this moves both of those in the right perspective, and I really champion. I appreciate your case history as well. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly don't want my questions to indicate that I disagree with the validity of the program. I too support it. I just want to make sure we get the details fleshed out as we go along, because sometimes they come back to haunt us at a later date. And with this legislation, I don't know how much of a growth industry we're going to create in the victim mediation area, but I'll ask the same question again. If we expect all volunteer that eventually these people, in spite of all good intentions, burn out and the programs begin to fall by the wayside. So there has to be some financial support for these programs. Where will the financial support come from? What will a typical mediation cost? And we are now asking the Hess Department to certify these groups, these mediation groups, as qualified to do mediation. We have other licensing kinds of groups, and they have to pay a fee to be licensed, sort of a no-net loss thing with the state. Can you help me out with understanding of the financial aspects of this program?
Through the chair, Representative Bundy, the Commissioner of Health and Social Services is vested with the authority now under statute to recognize community youth courts, and that was put in place so that as the state continued to work with municipalities, that we could concentrate on single entities rather than create a situation where we may have two or three youth court organizations in the same town vying for limited resources or for the recognition of their program. I believe that is the intent of this legislation, or that certainly is part of why I would support the way that this is worded, that someone needs to single out a community dispute resolution program as being the official organization recognized by the state for the local community, and then that helps minimize this duplication of services, which further divide the resources. In terms of where the monies will come from, in a general way, what I would say is that since the Community Dispute Resolution Center got underway in Anchorage, I became aware of the mediation industry. I would not have been able to tell you that there were professional mediators 5 years ago. There are a whole number of them that make their living that way in private practice, and some of the people who spoke in Anchorage sounded as though that is what they do. I think that it's critical in terms of helping the community take ownership for issues of juvenile delinquency by fostering the idea of volunteerism. This isn't just a they will solve it. That's why we're where we're at today, is the state has always been the they will solve it. Insisting that programs utilize community volunteers is critical to local ownership, as well as obtaining the sufficient resources to make something work. I would hope that we don't get to a point down the road where those volunteers disappear. I hope that communities continue to want to be involved in making their homes, their streets, their neighborhoods safe, a safe and happy place to live. The state can't do that, but in a partnership, maybe we as people can. You are right. Organizations do need some money to operate, and where that comes from, that depends. But in the Anchorage situation, right now the municipality and the private donations of businesses in the community are contributing a great deal. Looking forward, again, I believe they are working towards a United Way recognition. I do know that as Mark Bagich was helping get this going, someone down in Kenai was so excited about what was happening that they sent money to Anchorage. So, you know, the money, my experience is if the idea is good, the money will be there somehow, some way. And that's what's happened so far with the youth court, with victim offender mediation. It may be an issue where somewhere down the road, organizations will approach the state asking for funds, because it does take money to, you know, keep the lights on and make sure that the service is available. But perhaps the agencies, you know, the executive director is there, Mr. Cunningham is there. They may have a greater a better response as to where they anticipate funding to come from in the future.
Chairman, just to follow up. To clarify my understanding, you envision a victim mediation group in Anchorage, not several competing ones. Is that my understanding?
Yes.
Much like a youth court. And then the commissioner will have to basically bless which organization is that one.
Yes.
Nothing seems to work like success, though. With the stories that you're telling us, I would think there will be, agree with you, the funding will follow. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you. It would seem to me that pursuing this form of dispute resolution offers great savings to the state in the short term and in the long term. And the alternative to proceeding through this kind of dispute resolution would be to have a judge, a clerk, a prosecuting attorney, usually a state-funded defense attorney, go through an adversarial process, and if that failed, ultimately go through an incarceration and possibly over a long period of time. So the earlier we intervene, it has long-term benefits to the state, and has immediate short-term benefits, and it lowers the costs associated with the adversarial process.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berkowitz, that is absolutely correct. What you described is the way it used to be in Anchorage, and now we have resources to minimize those litigation battles. So in the long term, we have been saving money because this resource is available.
Okay. Any other comments? What is the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bundy.
I would move sponsor substitute for HB 7 as amended with individual recommendations and
a bunch of
a sign of things to come, zero fiscal.
Is there objection? Hearing none, it's moved from the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Congratulations, sir. I'm kind of upset, though. There was no negative comments.
I tried to
hear it. What happens when you have a bipartisan effort?
I want to thank the committee for the questions they did ask, and certainly all the people on the teleconference. With that, we adjourn.